JEA's CEO says we blew it when it came to preparing for the wrath of Hurricane Matthew. Hillary Clinton edges ahead of Donald Trump in Florida, and the feds extend that voter registration deadline here due to the storm. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Also, subscribe to that podcast on iTunes and the WJCT app. And just ahead, all the top stories of the week with our Friday roundtable. Get on the line now whether you want to talk about the weather, the power outages at your house, the politics that are swirling about us. It's 549-2937. Then later, we're going to hear about the upcoming Florida Bat Festival in Gainesville. Yep, there is such a thing. Also, ahead of this weekend's free concert, don't miss the live and studio performance by the new Civic Orchestra of Jacksonville. All of that ahead. But first this hour, it's Friday, and that means our esteemed panel of pundits is here to comment on everything from JEA's troubles to the Donald Trump tape. You know them well. They are WJCT's own analyst, John Berg. Good morning.
Good morning.
Fred Matthews, formerly of The Examiner.
Good morning, Melissa.
And A.G. Gankarski of Florida Politics.
Hello.
We'd hope to also host Tanya Weathersby of the Times Union today. Sadly, Tanya's leaving the Times Union for a new job in Memphis at the Commercial Appeal there. Sorry she couldn't be with us, but we certainly wish her the very best. And we have a packed agenda for you today, including your calls. Our top story, JEA's chief executive on the hot seat, CEO Paul McElroy, we're learning, was out of state for several days as the utility was dealing with the widespread power outages this area suffered during Hurricane Matthew. Now, JEA continues to face criticism over its response to power outages and also sewage spills in the wake of the storm. We want to know your thoughts about JEA's performance restoring power. Let us know how things went in your neighborhood at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show or weigh in on our Facebook page. And in a moment, we'll go to AG, John, Fred, and Tanya Weathersby, who just arrived. But first, let's listen to CEO Paul McElroy explaining to customers why the work to restore their power took so much longer than the utility had promised.
The reason why we've been slowed down has been the devastating impact on trees. Our initial assessment, we just did not pick that up. And when I say we, I mean we, the management, missed that.
Okay. A.G. Gankarski, let's start with you. The CEO, of course, is accountable for the performance of the utility. Lots of angry customers. As of last night, there were still several thousand without power. JEA, is the criticism deserved?
I think it is. I mean, they still got people out today, about 1,300 right now. That's last I checked. But, you know, Paul McElroy was out of town for 4 days during the storm. I know his daughter was getting married out in Arkansas, and that's a big deal. But, you know, 100-year storm, I mean, that's what Rick Scott was saying. That's what Lenny Curry was saying. You know, Paul McElroy was out of town, and the lieutenants were running the show. That's part of the reason that that promise was made that we'll have all your power back Monday at 11:59 p.m., you know, McElroy wasn't here when that promise was made. And you know, he didn't have his eye on the ball. There was a council meeting Tuesday night where he got lit up by John Cressenbeny, Matt Schellenberg, two of the most voluble people in council, asking about accountability. There's going to be a full report in this situation, and that report is not going to reflect well on the senior leadership at JEA.
John Burr, you've covered the utilities' ups and downs for decades in this city, and you commented the other day that some of the institutional memory in dealing with this type of 100-year storm is just not there anymore.
It's not. I was on a street that just got power back on Tuesday night, and because a tree fell down and knocked out the power line. But in that time, I got to talk to a crew leader at JEA quite a bit over the course of the days, and you know, his take was, look, you know, the guys, you know, working the streets are doing everything they can where the fall down was with the managers. And I think this is what McElroy is saying. You know, the management has no experience dealing with a storm like this. The people who dealt with Dora, you know, 50 years ago, they're way retired. So this management team, and not just the top people, but all the way down through the organization, has no experience. So He felt like that's where the blame lay.
Now, Fred Matthews, what about the CEO's decision to leave town? Granted, he had to attend the wedding of his daughter. But in hindsight, the optics, as they say, might not be helpful at this time.
Well, there's no question about the optics. And of course, that him leaving town was just one more thing to add to the pile of, we won't call them mistakes, but unfortunate decisions with this deal. I mean, especially at his pay level, if the mayor is going to stay in town and the emergency staff is going to stay in town, what bigger corporation that has its hand on all of our utilities? I mean, these people control everything. They control lights and water and sewage and pumps and all of this. And the guy running the show isn't on duty. I mean, you can't ask for a bigger punching bag than this. And his excuse is about, don't blame the guys out there. Just, it lies with me. It lies with us. Okay, that's all well and good. But you're safe and sound. The rest of us are scrambling around, you know. And when Zone C got announced, everybody had to figure out, what is Zone C? You know, is Zone C just east of the Intracoastal or is it everywhere? It's everywhere.
You had to look at the map to see that. And Tanya Weathersby now with us. Go ahead.
Yes. Fred's absolutely right about everybody scrambling and trying to figure this out. I posted on my Facebook page that I was in a safe zone because it was hard for me to get information, and I couldn't tell where Zone C was. And somebody said to me, honey, you're in Zone C. Well, by that time, I wasn't about to move. You know, I said, I just have to take my chances. But, you know, there's a valid argument to be made, I guess, in some circles, that the CEO, of the guy who's over at JEA, is not actually out fixing lines. He's not actually physically involved in the process and of restoring power. But at the same time, though, this is a one-of-a-kind storm. We don't normally, you know, get these. We haven't been through this for quite some time.
That's the problem. This is new ground for emergency response in this city because we haven't typically had this type of incident. Now, one of you mentioned the sewage issue. We had about 11 million gallons of release of sewage go onto the ground or into waterways. And here's the CEO, Paul McElroy, explaining why so many of the sewers overran. Let's listen.
And just like our customers, where half of the customers lost power, about half of our pump stations lost power. About 25% of our pump stations have generation backup. Several of those generators at key sites failed in the transfer, and that caused part of the spill. Others, just the amount of water, putting lines underwater, caused a certain amount of spill. And our ability to physically get to some of these pump stations during the peak of the storm, when travel was not allowed, slowed us down to getting portable generation to those sites.
All right, A.G. Gankarski, certainly some learning experience in case we have this issue again. Hurricane season, by the way, is still not over yet.
No, there's still one out in the Atlantic last I checked. Mm-hmm. But, you know, whose responsibility is it to have backup generators at the sewer stations?
Yeah.
It's Paul McElroy's, it's JEA's.
Yeah.
You know, and these excuses are things that if the system were being tested, you know, if the system were being monitored, this stuff wouldn't happen. And, you know, I want to bring up a corollary issue also. You know, JEA's delays were blamed on, you know, severe tree damage of the lines of the system. Who's responsible for trees? The city. You know, the city, you know, has code enforcement, they have, you know, right of way, they have public works, and yet they haven't monitored this stuff because they've been understaffed for at least a decade because nobody in the city wants to pay taxes. Oh, you can't lift property taxes. You know, so you got a bunch of franchise fees in JEA, you've got a bunch of, you know, top level staff being paid like they're paid in the private sector because you got to be competitive. But, you know, when it comes to actually keeping the system working during a disaster, we underperformed every place but one or two counties in the state, and that is egregious.
Mm. Well, let's go to your calls right now. Did you lose power during Hurricane Matthew? How quick was JEA to get to your neighborhood? Let us know your thoughts as we look at the top stories of the week with our Friday roundtable. It's 549-2937. Arden is on the northwest side. Hi, Arden. Good morning. Happy Friday.
Yes, happy Friday to everybody. How you doing?
Doing great, thanks.
Excellent. And listening to the conversation, as well as being, you know, a longtime resident of Jacksonville, as well as an employee of JEA, I was very critical initially But then when I considered how many people were without power at the beginning of the storm, and then within a four-day period, considering all that had taken place, and of course we had never encountered such a storm like this with down power lines as well as trees and everything, I think the company did well. Now, I do have one criticism, and that is the restoration protocol, which if you go on JEA website, you will see that the protocol calls for, of course, first responders, large businesses, and then large communities being restored first. I can tell you, over 32 years in my community, we have never had a down power line. We always lose what I call a transformer fuse that blows. No down power lines. So if they were to, my company, were to have a roving technician lineman to handle quick repairs, mm-hmm. instead of having everybody going out to all of the major ones.
Are you going to make that opinion known at JEA?
I sure am. I'm going to listen to suggestions. Next time the boss man comes to the plant, I'm going to bring that up.
Okay.
And, but just from the standpoint of the restoration process, I think that that can be critiqued and fine-tuned, and I think we would do much better because, again, a lot of the major power issues, of course, it takes a lot of guys, but then there are these unique situations
yes.
where it will take less than 15 minutes to restore power to people who just have down transformer fuse.
Thank you, Arden. And I so appreciate your insight as an employee of the utility. Thanks for that call.
And those types of insights, you know, will be harvested from this experience. And, you know, I really, all told, a week out, we're, what, 1,800 residences still without power. I'm not really a big critic of JEA on this. I think the trees thing sounds like a great excuse, but it's a valid thing. I've talked to people in the insurance business who said the same thing and said, you know, that because the city hadn't been hit in so long, you know, that 50 years, those trees are all growing.
Here's a tweet
yeah.
about
the tree. Yeah, they're getting bigger yeah. and they're yeah. getting bigger.
Here's a tweet from yeah. Chase. The majority yeah. of the outages were due to falling trees. Where's the preemptive tree trimming? Let's go to mm-hmm. Evan on the south side. Evan, I guess you just got your power back. Is that right?
Yes, that's Yvonne.
Yvonne. Okay. Thank you, Yvonne. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking our call. Yes, we got power back day before yesterday. I suppose what I'm wondering is I didn't see anyone from city, not one patrol car, and no one come down our street and until someone showed up with a transformer on the back of a truck. But my concern when I, around the fifth day of calling each day to actually try to get real information, we were given an address on Beach Boulevard that was supposedly the reason for our outage here, but no one could say when that was. And when you talk to folks on the helpline, you'd get different information from each person that you spoke with.
I guess that was frustrating for you then. So how many days total were you? How many days total were you without power?
Three
days. Okay.
It was over 5 days.
Over five total.
And yeah. My concern is sometimes it would get to us on a private road that sometimes doesn't show up on GPS. And I say private potholes, not maintained by the city.
And that can be difficult, sure. Well, Yvonne, I appreciate the call. And so, thanks, Yvonne. That's an experience that many thousands had. Tanya Weathersby.
Yes, I ran into, mercifully, over where I live in Springfield, I didn't lose power, and my neighbors didn't lose power, but I ran into many people, my parents over in Northwest Jacksonville, didn't get their power restored until
I'm going to say like Monday, the phone and everything was out. But I also ran into people on that side of town who were having some serious problems because of not having the power. There are people who are caring for elderly parents and, you know, a lot of elderly people who are living in their homes. And that area of town has a lot of retirees and people who, you know, who need special services and folks taking care of them. And I ran into a friend of mine whose mother was 80-some years old, and it was Thursday. They still didn't have power. So, you know, maybe the JEA can look at this as a game film and try to prioritize some things a little more than they've done before.
I'm sure they will, and I'm sure they are. Yeah. And lots of folks on hold wanting to talk about the aftermath of the hurricane. Stay on the line if you want to shift gears with us, because the political winds are blowing, too, in Florida this week.
That's a hurricane right there.
A federal judge overruled Governor Rick Scott this week and forced the state to extend the voter registration deadline to October 18th. Judge Mark Walker ruling that no right is more precious than the right to cast a ballot. This, as Hillary Clinton now holds a 6-point lead over Donald Trump here in Florida. According to a new poll out this week from Florida Atlantic University, Trump's campaign is scrambling after an avalanche of allegations from women following on the heels of an Access Hollywood video we've all seen, as more and more women come forward alleging that Trump improperly kissed or touched them without their consent, including a woman in Palm Beach, Florida. We want your calls about the campaign, the voter registration deadline, and how Florida will probably once again play a pivotal role. It's 549-2937. Fred Matthews, Donald Trump this morning saying the women's allegations aren't credible and that it's clearly the work of the Clinton campaign and the media. Activists and women's groups saying that the reason women so often don't report assaults is because of they fear that they won't be believed.
When you stand in the midst of a crowd of supporters like what he had in Ocala this week. And when you think back to him being here in Jacksonville and that arena being so full, the fire marshal had to stand out front to keep people from coming in. You as a candidate begin to believe that you can really do this thing,
except
when your advisors bring you the data.
Yeah. And in 2004, I'll never forget, in 2004, John Kerry was attracting these massive rallies.
Yep.
He thought he had it in the bag. In 2012, Mitt Romney, massive rallies.
Yep.
But rallies aren't data.
They don't vote. And when your folks bring you the data, and now we come to understand that he told many of his advisors he didn't want them to vet him. Don't go back there. I'm not going to talk about it. And this is a result of that. And millions of voters are having to now come to the realization that their candidate is not going to win.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a fantasy. It's not a rigged game. You're simply not going to win. Because you don't, and Florida is turning on him, and that's a big deal.
He's down by 6 in Florida, and this poll was taken, by the way, before the fallout from this video and these new allegations have really gotten into the public's consciousness.
One of the things that I'm really watching in this debate, after some of the work I did in my graduate studies on Latinos and growing Latino strength in the South, in the rural South, as opposed to the regular the gateway states, is just to really see what kind of impact Latino voting is going to have. And I'm saying, that's why you're seeing these leads for Hillary Clinton in North Carolina. That's why you possibly may see Arizona being in play, which it looks like it is right now. And that's probably a big reason for Hillary Clinton's lead in Florida. We talk about the I-4 corridor and all the retirees and all these retirees who are very conservative. But what we don't often talk about is how you've had this massive influx of Puerto Ricans who've come to the state, who now registered, and their voter registration among Latinos is way up.
And
a huge role.
Now, the registration deadline, as we mentioned, is extended to next Tuesday, but both parties will, of course, take full advantage of getting as many voters on the rolls as possible.
Actually, I wouldn't say that.
You wouldn't say that.
One party is taking advantage of voter registration, the other is not. The Democrats have a ground game, the Republicans don't. There's a 10-to-1 advantage in terms of these registrations.
Yeah.
That said, I want to throw cold water on the polls a little bit. I mean, a 6-point advantage sounds like a lot, but there are polls that contradict that. And no matter what scandal has come out over Donald Trump over the last year plus, you know, it hasn't hurt him, you know, that much in Florida, at least. You know, he keeps bouncing back, and I don't want to review his scandals. We all know them, but you know, he keeps bouncing back, and you know, the Republican base seems willing to overlook almost anything, including a fusillade of people saying.
Well, what are your thoughts though about the latest 538 analysis looking at the gender divide?
Oh wow! Yeah,
showing that if only men could vote in this election, Donald Trump would win in a landslide. If only women could vote in this election, Hillary Clinton would win by an even bigger landslide. And if only women could vote in Florida, according to 538. Clinton would win easily.
Well, John. Of course. And, you know, it's not that Clinton's ahead by six. It's the trend that where Clinton has come from in the last 2 weeks from you know, absolutely tied or even losing in Florida to 6-point lead. That's what's important. You know, I agree with Fred. You know, Trump's going to lose this election. The bigger question for the Republican Party is, how do you deal with that? And can you possibly maintain control of the Senate and the House? Because if you lose the House, and people are saying this is starting to be in play now, the Republican Party is in very, very bad shape.
And I want to talk more about that with Fred, Tanya, and AG. But let's go to your calls. Lance is down on Palm Coast. Hi, Lance. Thanks for holding. Good morning.
Good morning. You know, I find it kind of amazing. Everyone's quoting polls. I mean, I've read enough articles. NPR has had enough, whatever you call it, to say how polls were inaccurate at best 10 years ago. And now with the limited people with home phone numbers to take that telephone poll, it hasn't really moved to cellular numbers. How we're still quoting polls that are known to be inaccurate about two candidates, one a criminal, one a lech. You know, I don't understand why you folks aren't talking about Gary Johnson, who is a viable politician. He's not going to get elected because the American public keeps getting pounded down with the criminal and the lech. No news organization, yours included, talks about the third-party candidate.
Well, Lance, actually, that's not true. I hosted Governor William Weld of Massachusetts on this program a few weeks ago. He is the VP candidate on the Libertarian ticket. And, you know, I also interviewed the Green Party candidate Jill Stein as part of a statewide program called Decision Florida. She was on the program and heard statewide on public radio throughout Florida just a couple of weeks ago. So, but I do appreciate you pointing that out. Let's talk about the third-party candidates. A.G. Gankarski.
You know, I can address Gary Johnson's problem. Gary Johnson's biggest problem is Gary Johnson. The fact that when he gets on a live mic, he's as likely as not to make some horrible gaffe, like talking about East Korea or where's Aleppo or some other thing, that obscures his message of non-interventionism, his message of, you know, shrinking government, of actually having government operate within its means. These are important messages, but the fact that Gary Johnson, after a lifetime in politics, hasn't been able to figure out how to work a mic, that is troubling. Yes. And, you know, that's the death blow to that campaign. It could be at 20% if Gary Johnson were a better candidate, but he didn't do the prep work between 2012 when he got 1%, and now when he's polling 7-9.
He doesn't even read newspapers, for gosh sake.
Yeah.
Well, I don't blame him on that.
All right, Fred on the South side. Go ahead, Fred.
Yeah, I think I've voted Republican all my life. I've never voted for a Democrat president, although I have voted Democrat on the local level. I think it is absolutely a sad day in America when you're saying that this man is only losing by 6 points. I think it's a very, very sad reality for America where we are. It's this kind of a human being running for the highest office in the world could only be losing by 6 points. And I really, really feel sorry for our allies, the ones that depend on America. They have to be absolutely petrified. That's all I have to say.
So
thank you, Fred. On the South side, Fred Matthews.
You know, and I think he enunciated what many, as your poll indicated, if only men were voting, there'd be no question about it, Trump would win. And, you know, I have a lot of friends in the veterans community, and by and large, veterans are going to Trump because they're looking at a strong man, as some people have said with this. But we have to remember that we aren't an island of one anymore. This is truly a country where it is a melting pot. You have to, other people's opinion matters. And you can no longer assume that, just as we've talked about with Black Lives Matter, that white privilege is going to always carry through the day. And this election is showing that. Yeah. Many people can see the numbers there as we stand forth. What's going to be the largest majority in the country in a few years? These are realities that we all have to come to terms with, and we all have to learn to get along with folks who are not like us. And this election, just as with Obama's election, is part and parcel of that. And it's a hard pill to swallow, but it is one that we're going to have to swallow in this country. It's one that England's having to swallow. Who's the mayor of London? And what's his last
Sadiq
name?
Khan. Yeah.
Okay. Who would have guessed?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I think you're right, Fred. Yeah. That part of the dynamic is what you're talking about. But also in this election, Trump is such a divisive candidate. I mean, you know, it has nothing to do with white privilege.
But that's what they wanted.
It does have to do with white privilege. It has to do with the death of the white middle class, of people who are 50, 60, 70 years old, who realize they don't have a nest egg, who realize their kids are going to come out worse than they are. That's what Trump's feeding into. He's feeding to economic insecurity, economic instability, the recession that didn't actually lift anybody but the top 1%, and that's where Trump is getting his 45% in these polls.
And so how is that economic reality of those people. How's that related to race?
Well, Hillary Clinton.
How's it related to race?
It's related to race because white people expect to win, and white people aren't winning anymore. When Trump says we don't win anymore, who do you think he's talking about?
Tanya Weathersby, I don't want to leave you out. I appreciate all of these comments. Let me ask you, Tanya, about the really the core. The nub of this, I think, as well, that has been laid bare in recent days when we saw this unprecedented gender divide. Well, there's always been a gender divide in presidential politics. But when you look at the split now, I don't think there's ever been anything like it in the history of polling. So as we look at how far apart men and women are in this election, and we look at the videotape that has been endlessly replayed, and we weigh opponents of Hillary Clinton's concerns about her track record, and that on the other hand, we see women coming forward now alleging that Trump has engaged in predatory behavior. Are women going to decide this election?
Oh, yes. I think women are definitely going to decide this election. First of all, there was some chatter this morning on my page on Facebook about Michelle Obama and that speech she made yesterday, where she got pretty emotional discussing how Donald Trump's comments on the video, his other comments about women, his propensity to tend to judge women as objects that he can just walk up to and kiss and judge women on their looks and everything is very hurtful. And the reason why, even when you get beyond just the sheer reality of the fact that Donald Trump is eminently just unqualified to be president. I mean, I just put it out that he has very little understanding of how the Constitution works and how laws work. You also have someone who is also saying things and has been caught saying things that probably a good share of American women can relate to. As women, many of us can relate to being the only woman in the room, and you know, some of us can relate to having certain jokes told. We can relate to subtle and we can relate to macroaggressions. We can relate to microaggressions coming from men. We can relate to all the things that are embodied, not just in that one tape, that one video where you heard him, you know, making the obscene comments. Which really aren't really the point. The point is just that he feels he can say and do anything to people who he feels are weaker. And women have dealt with that for a long time, and women don't want to deal with that anymore. So that's something that when you get beyond the vast political thing of it all, that's something that that women can relate to, most women, on a personal level. Whether you have tried to get a job and you've not been able to get it, and it has something to do with you being a woman. Older women who may have not been able to get credit unless they had a husband. All those things. Those things all bubble to the surface.
Let's go now to Ray in Orange Park. Hi, Ray. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to comment on the leaked emails from Hillary Clinton's staff.
You're talking about WikiLeaks.
Yes.
Yeah.
The WikiLeaks. I think it's incredible, and I like to take the liberty. The snooper who videotaped a beautiful news lady anchor in nude and then put it.
What's your question, though, Ray? What's your comment?
I think the media is doing a horrible job of looking at the emails and perpetrating this crime instead of the real story, which should be who committed this theft.
How the leak occurred. Okay, sure. Okay, thank you, Ray. We're getting a little tight on time, but let's talk about that for a minute.
How the leak occurred
and what's in the emails, yes, what we're learning.
Yeah. Well, the U.S. government says that Russia is to blame for the leaks and hacked. So, you know, you can believe that or not. What's in the, you know, I think he's got a point. In any normal election, those emails would be a very potent discussion. It's just that Trump is such a moron that he's sucked all the oxygen out of the room, and that's all people want to talk about.
Fred, AG?
Well, I mean, that's the bottom line. I mean, you know, what do you want to be done? I mean, the WikiLeaks have leaked it. The Russians are probably the ones who do it. We're not blaming the Chinese anymore for some reason, but the Russians are doing it.
And
Julian Assange is sitting over there grinning about it. What do you want? I mean, do you want her to be convicted of what? Of the folks saying that, well, maybe we should have, maybe we shouldn't let Bernie Sanders win. Well, Bernie Sanders wasn't a Democrat. Well, the Democrats don't work for him. I mean, what do you want done? You want prosecution? Who's going to prosecute? What are you going to do? And that's what it ultimately comes down to, the media and for the government. What do you want us to do about it?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, the emails, they're interesting. I've looked at the Podesta emails.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the way consultants are, talk. They're not nice people. Yeah. They talk about things like, quote-unquote, needy Latinos. They talk about demographic groups, you know, like they are just being marketed to because that's exactly how they think of them.
Those emails are just big nothing burgers. I've read things in the email, too, and I come to the same conclusion. These are people that's just how they talk. You have more of a case if the campaign actually acted on some of the insults.
And speaking of burgers.
But you don't have that.
Yeah. It's time to talk about the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from the week.
I thought we were
feeding us.
Luckily, there's never a shortage of material. Here it is for you right now, only in Florida. Only in Florida do McDonald's customers, see what I did there?
Yeah.
Do they fall asleep at the drive-thru and hold up the freaking line?
Yeah.
That's what happened to a couple who apparently had a Big Mac attack in the Keys Tuesday night and just fell asleep at the drive-thru window. 28-year-old Kevin Janssen and his female passenger ordered food but then never made it up to the window to pay and get their meal. An employee went outside and saw them asleep in the car at the ordering speaker.
Oh. Goodness, they should have ordered with Grubhub.
And only in Florida does plastic surgery always seem to go so horribly wrong. 44-year-old Juan Acosta pleads guilty in Miami to charging thousands of dollars to inject silicone into women's buttocks without medical training or even their permission. He told them he was injecting a cellular natural gel to affect the size and contour of their bootay, but instead he was injecting unlabeled silicone, according to court documents. Acosta will be sentenced this week. No comment?
Ain't going there. I have no comment that's FCC approved.
And best of luck to Tanya Weathersby off on a new adventure at the Memphis Commercial Appeal.
Hey, Tanya.
We will miss you.
And I will certainly miss, this is my home. They hard recruited me. It made me an offer I couldn't refuse. But, you know, I'll still be keeping up because I am of Jacksonville, from Jacksonville.
Well, we will miss you, and it's a loss for the First Coast, to be sure.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Alrighty. Tanya, okay. AG, Fred, right. and John Burr. Thanks, everyone.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
We'll be right back.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
How far have we come toward racial equality since the Civil Rights era? As PBS presents a nationwide exploration of this question in Black America Since MLK and Still I Rise, WJCT will host a televised forum with a panel of experts to discuss our progress with racial equality on the First Coast. Log on to wjct.org/community thread to submit your questions or to RSVP to be part of our studio audience on October 25th. Begin the discussion at wjct.org/community thread.
It's a story of revenge. King Frederick the Great tried to humiliate Johann Sebastian Bach by giving him an awkward tune and asking him to improvise around it. Well, King Fred was good, but Bach was great. The story and Bach's revenge, played by the Los Angeles Philharmonic, on the next Performance Today from APM. Weeknights at 7 on 89.9 WJCT.
Bat Festival, Batman. Welcome back. Yeah, the Florida Bat Festival is coming up next weekend over in Gainesville. It's your chance to enjoy local food and music, environmental organizations, and the largest bats in the world. Brian Pope is director of the Luby Bat Conservancy. He's on the line from Gainesville with more about the 11th annual Florida Bat Festival. Hey, Brian.
Hey, how you doing? Thank you very much for having me on.
So great to talk to you. I only recently learned about the Florida Bat Festival, but it's been going on for over a decade. What all is going to be happening?
Well, the first thing that folks are really going to do, and what this festival is about, is appreciating bats. So we have over 200 individuals here from 10 species, including the largest species in the world. So the first bats folks are going to see have wingspans of about 6 feet. So they are absolute giants. And that's going to be our theme this year, is hang with giants. So, and what's nice about these kind of fruit bats, they're relatively active during the day. All the bats that folks are going to see are from the old world. So Southeast Asia, Africa, Australia, South Pacific Islands. So I don't want folks to think that these bats with 5-6 foot wingspans are flying around their houses. But that's what they're going to see. And what's nice, like I said, not only are they active during the day, but they're also fruit bats. They're very inquisitive. They're very social. So folks are going to see them interacting with each other and playing with toys. Our bats even paint, by the way. So folks would have a chance to... They paint. So you go to Jacksonville Zoo, and I've got good friends up there. These guys, you have elephants that paint. You have penguins that paint. Our bats actually paint, and it's kind of neat how they do it. If they want to interact with the painting device, they can, or they can simply walk away from it, because they do walk, upside down, that is. But folks really get an appreciation for bats, and we wanted to go away from, Halloween's always been associated with bats and scary things, and they're not like that at all. So what this festival does is it gets folks an opportunity to come out to our property. And we're on 110 acres here. It's beautiful old Florida country. They bring their kids out, bring family and friends out. They get to see the largest bats in the world. But we're also going to have a huge kids area with bouncy houses in it. We have live music, local food. We're actually going to be having our inaugural beer garden this year, featuring two Gainesville breweries, Swamp Head and First Magnitude, and also an Ocala brewery, Infinite Ale Works. We've got a ton of games, activities, environmental vendors, raffle prizes featuring a Walt Disney World prize package, lots of stuff for people to do. It's a very family-friendly event. But like I said, what we're really focusing on is environmental responsibility. We teach folks how to make environmentally responsible choices. But what's really cool is they get up close and personal. They're not going to be in with the bats, but up close and personal with the largest bats in the world. And that's just really something cool to see.
And when you talk about that, how will people be able to observe the bats? And what will we learn about them?
Sure. So the way that our enclosures are set up, so these type of bats are different than the native bats we have here in Florida. They roost either in caves, man-made structures, under bridges, or some of our local bats actually roost out in trees, but underneath palm fronds and Spanish moss, that sort of thing. So, but our type of bats roost out in trees. They need sunlight, just like we need sunlight. So the enclosures we have are all outdoors, and folks walk down this long corridor, and there are bats on every side of them. So you've got the largest species in the world, which, by the way, we just had a baby born about a month or so ago. And we've got another one who's pregnant. And I'm really hoping she gives birth before the festival. But folks will actually get to see a mom and her pup interacting. But they get to see species from Southeast Asia, from the Philippines, from Australia. And they're going to see this great diversity of bat species. There are, as of today, 1,376 species of bats. So, and a lot of people think about bats as flying mice, flying rodents. That's not anywhere close to the truth. They're in their own order of mammals. They count for about 20% of mammals. And they get to see a large diversity of bats whenever they come here. And what they're going to learn is that bats aren't these scary animals. They have their very, very important roles in the ecosystem. Our bats around here eat tons and tons of mosquitoes, and we're actually writing a research proposal right now to study bat diets throughout the entire state by collecting guano samples at known roost sites, taking that guano and submitting it for DNA analysis to see, okay, what kind of mosquitoes are they eating? These are the kind of things that they're going to learn about, folks are going to learn about at the Bat Festival. We're going to be giving talks on this.
So you're saying that your study of bats could help prevent the spread of disease, maybe?
Absolutely. Bats linked to human health and disease. So we're going to be talking about native bats, even though the bats that are here at Luby are not native. Their importance. Are they eating mosquitoes that carry Zika? We know they eat agricultural pests. There's never really been a good study done in Florida. That's actually something Luby's doing. But we're going to be talking about the importance of bats, native Florida species. But then the bats that we have here are extremely important for pollination and seed dispersal. And about 90% of the regrowth of the rainforest in Southeast Asia, in Central and South America, is due to bats spreading seeds. So we're going to be talking about the environmental impact that bats have, the ecosystem impact, and also the economical impact, because these guys save farmers billions of dollars a year, our native bats, billions of dollars a year by reducing the need for pesticides because they're eating a ton of agricultural crops. So folks are going to be inundated with fantastic bat information, but we also have information on making responsible choices when it comes to palm oil, how they can recycle. We've got a ton of information, and we really hope folks will come out.
It sounds amazing, Brian. And again, this is next weekend, October 24th, at the Luby Bat Conservancy in Gainesville. What a fascinating event.
Next Saturday, October 22nd.
Pardon me, October 22nd. Yeah, a week from tomorrow. My mistake. It's the 11th annual Florida Bat Festival. Who knew bats could affect our lives in such myriad ways? So fascinating. Brian Pope, director of the Luby Bat Conservancy, thanks so much.
Thanks very much for having me. And if folks want to find out more information, they can go to our website, which is just Luby, LUBEE.org. And thank you again for the opportunity.
Thank you. And we'll be right back. From the panhandle to the peninsula, the Sunshine State's politics are as hot as the weather. Trump versus Clinton, the race for the U.S. Senate, new political boundaries and familiar issues. Join 89.9 every Friday at 1 p.m. for Decision Florida. Let your voice be heard.
North Face markets itself as a clothing brand for outdoor adventurers, but lots of people wear it for just lounging around too, you know.
We used to think that, well, that must be a different consumer that lives in the city versus in the mountains, and that's not true.
I'm Kai Rizdal, North Face and its brand, next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Hi, this is Andrew Wickman, host of Blues Horizon. Join WJCT's After Hours every Monday night at 11 for the best in classic and modern blues. Join us as we build the perfect blues playlist and then take a drive with us into the Blues Horizon every Monday night at 11 on 89.9 FM Public Radio.
call it Stormy Monday.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, it's a new musical group here on the First Coast offering free classical concerts. The Civic Orchestra of Jacksonville invites you to come see them perform this Sunday at the beautiful St. John's Cathedral downtown. In a moment, principal flute soloist Julie Badger will perform live in studio. But right now, we welcome Civic Orchestra president and co-founder Nadine Turk. Good morning.
Hi, Melissa. Thanks for having us.
Now, we have a beautiful symphony, of course, but this is another way for people to experience classical music, and it's free.
Absolutely. And we are a group of professionals, amateurs, and student musicians. We all volunteer our time to rehearse and perform classical music concerts for our community, and our concerts are they're free and open to the entire public.
What inspired you to create this?
Well, you know, most major cities have civic orchestras, and we had not, and I was, you know, just kind of tired of waiting for one to start, so I thought, you know, jump in and through
Facebook. Make it happen.
Yeah, exactly, and through social media, it was really easy to put it together.
And so you are going to be holding an incredible inaugural season concert this Sunday at 5 o'clock at St. John's Cathedral. That is at 256 East Church Street, downtown Jacksonville. Free admission. What will the performances be?
We are doing a Respighi piece, and we are doing a Brahms Academic Festival Overture, and we are lucky to have Suzanne Saltmarsh and the Saltmarsh dancers performing to that piece. And then we are doing a Cécile Chaminade flute concertina for orchestra, and it's such an interesting piece. It was commissioned in 1902 for the Music Conservatory in Paris as a piece that all the flute players had to play in order to pass their exam. And it's fiendishly difficult.
It's very difficult. Well, absolutely. Then, everybody listen up, because right now, principal flute soloist Julie Badger, here in studio with us, is going to perform this very intricate Chaminade Concerto for Flute and Orchestra. This is a preview of this Sunday's free concert at St. John's Cathedral. Let's listen. I can see why you're in the Civic Orchestra of Jacksonville. Wow, that is incredible. What talent you've assembled.
Oh, it's so great. We're such a diverse group of musicians, and we come from all over the city, and you know, people come to Jacksonville from all over the world, so it really reflects the diversity of our city.
Well, kudos, Nadine. This is the inaugural concert for the Civic Orchestra of Jacksonville, 5 o'clock Sunday at St. John's Cathedral, and followed by a champagne reception.
Absolutely. We hope to see you there.
Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Melissa.
Again, that is free and open to everyone. And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Merschart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and the WJCT app. Next on the Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup. That's coming up. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. Monday. Have a great weekend.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.